we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Twitter hacked, blue checks iced, secret moderation tools exposed. New Hong Kong law makes it illegal to dissent for anybody, anywhere in the world. Credential dump security firm hacked, dumping billions of creds on the net. And a Cloudflare outage takes out half the internet. Hey everybody, this is Mark Jeftovic with another episode of Access of Easy Weekly Briefing. This is episode number 155, and that would make the show notes going up on accessofeasy.com/155. I'm recording this on July 20th, 2020. And the quote for last week was, "When you blame others, you give up your power to change." And that was Douglas Adams, author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Nobody got it. But while we're on this topic, I also said nobody got number 153's quote, which was, "The most basic question is not what is best, but who shall decide what is best." Turns out somebody did get that. That somebody was Cynthia Whalen. She said Thomas Sowell. That was the right answer. I just missed it in the comments until the following week. So this week's quote is, "The truth never caresses, it always stings. Remember the rules, you can't search this up online," and the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next web hosting or domain renewal on us. Okay, so Cloudflare outage takes out half the internet, except EasyDNS. Not half the internet, but a huge chunk of it. Anyway, on Friday afternoon, large swaths of the internet did go down as Cloudflare fat-fingered a router update and they blew up their internal network. Turns out, according to their post-mortem on their blog, they accidentally routed all of their global traffic to one POP. And that POP subsequently vaporized almost instantly, and it took down their internal network, and it affected their DNS. And you all know how it goes. When your DNS goes away, you go away. And another thing is, there are commercial DNS providers, like EasyDNS, among others, that actually use Cloudflare to do DDoS mitigation of our name servers. At least one other DNS provider that had all of their name servers behind Cloudflare, they went off the air too. We didn't go off the air, even though we also use Cloudflare, because we don't have all of our name servers behind Cloudflare. We just have some of them. And we do that for a reason, because we dislike single points of failure. So we have some of our name servers behind Cloudflare. We have some behind Voxility, and hopefully they will not be down at the same time. I wrote a longer piece about it on the EasyDNS blog. There's actually quite a Hacker News thread going on about it as well today, so we will link to that in the show notes page. And this, of course, shameless self-promotion and plug, brings up our proactive name servers service, which we've been using for years, almost a decade now. Nobody else does it. I don't know why, but it's an automatic system to monitor your name servers. If your name servers go away because your vendor blows up, it switches you to a new set of name servers that you have set up in advance, and that way you keep resolving and your customers don't notice that you've disappeared from the internet. And when your vendor comes back up, it switches you back. We've dropped the pricing on proactive name servers, so just go to proactivenameservers.com, check it out. There's never been a better time to think about this now that it's fresh in your mind. Anyhow, Twitter hacked, blue checks iced, and secret moderation tools exposed on Wednesday afternoon. It's kind of a crazy week, all told. But on Wednesday afternoon, Twitter was rattled by a pretty thorough penetration of their system when parties unknown cracked into staff access tools, and they used it to create a sort of advanced fee fraud soliciting Bitcoin from multiple extremely high-profile accounts, including Elon Musk, Bill Gates, Barack Obama, Jeff Bezos, I think Joe Biden as well, among others. So the accounts were used to tweet a Bitcoin address to which the story was, you send some Bitcoin to this address, we're going to send you twice as much back. It took a few minutes, only a few minutes, for enough people to fall for it that the BTC address amassed over 12 Bitcoin, which is over $120,000 USD. And then if you look at a block explorer, that Bitcoin was quickly shuttled away through the system. It's probably all sitting in a Monero wallet by now. That is gone. And then the hackers started releasing screen grabs of what they saw when they penetrated the system. And it looked like they gained control of a staff moderation panel that had parameters around blacklisted trends and blacklisted and protected accounts, and that was all very interesting. Twitter, when they were scrambling to get a handle on this situation for a while, they locked down all verified accounts. All the blue checks were not able to tweet for about an hour or so until they could get, you know, control of the situation again. New Hong Kong law makes it illegal to dissent for anybody, anywhere in the world. So China's implemented a new law, and they kept the law secret until the moment it took effect. And what it does is it criminalizes political dissent about Hong Kong, no matter where in the world it takes place, and it even applies to non-Chinese citizens. So in other words, if you criticize the Chinese government or express political dissent around the Hong Kong situation, you are potentially facing criminal liability in China. So it is, they want to criminalize those who, quote, write favorably about Hong Kong independence, politicians who support sanctions against Hong Kong, or even groups of Canadian students who provide financial support to the city's protesters, end quote. That quote came out of the Globe and Mail. That's why they specifically zeroed in on Canadian students, but this would apply to students in any country. And the maximum penalties of those convicted is life imprisonment. And, you know, this was out of the Globe and Mail, but I also saw an article from Axios, who actually went and they hired some lawyers to get a legal opinion on this law themselves to really, you know, double check their thinking. Is China really trying to pass a law that applies to everybody in the world? And the answer was yes. Yes, that's what they're doing. And, you know, it's the same sort of idea around GDPR when the, in a much milder case, of course, when the European Union passed the privacy law there, I wrote a blog article at the time saying it's not really tenable to expect non-European companies with no European presence to abide by these laws, because otherwise you're stuck having to comply with every other law in every other jurisdiction on the planet, and it just gets kind of crazy pretty quickly. Credential dump security firm hacked, dumping billions of credentials on the net. So there's a security startup called Data Viper, and what they do is they catalog previous data breach credentials to detect client exposure to hacks. In other words, so when websites get hacked and their credentials get dumped, the logins and the passwords, there are companies that collect those breach dumps, and then they use it to look for compromised accounts within your organization. So Data Viper does this, but they themselves also got hacked. So their entire inventory of leaked credentials, about 15 billion of them across 8,000 website breaches, has been posted online on the dark web along with their own internal database. Zero logging VPN turns out to be logging, exposing millions of records. So Here's a name we've heard it a million times, Bob Dianchenko. So he strikes again. He's the security researcher that has this uncanny knack for uncovering vast troves of data that various companies leave exposed out there in the open, unprotected, on the internet. This time he found log files in a database belonging to UFO VPN, which is a Hong Kong-based company that bills itself as a zero-logging VPN provider. That's supposed to mean they don't keep logs, but they do keep logs, it turns out. And so the data contains API request logs and web access logs for potentially all of their users, and they claim to have 20 million users. And the company responded to Dianchenko's security exposure notification email by claiming that the data was anonymized. But his company, Dianchenko's company, has been analyzing the data, and they don't think that this data has been anonymized. Google faces lawsuit after in-app tracking, even after users opted out. So there's a new lawsuit against Google that is seeking class action status, and it's the second such lawsuit filed in as many months by the law firm Boies Schiller Flexner on behalf of consumers, and this one alleges that the company is violating U.S. federal wiretap and California state privacy laws by continuing to, quote, record what people are doing on hundreds of thousands of mobile apps, even when they follow the company's recommended settings for stopping such monitoring, end quote. So what that means is Google snoops on various apps like ride hailing and news, even when the user has disabled monitoring of web and app activity in the device settings. Spanish government is a client of secretive cell phone hacking company. So we've talked about these guys before, NSO Group. They're a secretive Israeli firm, and they help governments of the world hack into and eavesdrop the mobile phones of journalists and political dissidents. And they also emerged as a player in the emerging COVID-19 contact tracing industry when one of their databases was found wide open and exposed on the internet. So now we can add Spain to the list of governments employing NSO's service, where the company's hacking tools were used against prominent politicians in that country, namely people at the forefront of Catalonia's push for independence from Spain. British government bans Huawei gear from the UK 5G network. So the UK government has barred the Chinese telecom giant Huawei from participating in the build-out of England's 5G network. That's similar to similar moves that have happened here in Canada and in the US. The decision is a reversal from an earlier one in January, which would have permitted a limited role in the construction of the network infrastructure. Now it's out completely, and UK carriers that have already used their gear on their 5G build-out, including Vodafone and BT, now have until 2027 to remove that gear from their networks. Canadian Supreme Court upholds genetic non-discrimination law. The Canadian Supreme Court upheld the Genetic Non-Discrimination Act, which bars third parties from requiring an individual to supply genetic data. This one's kind of weird because the federal government itself challenged its own legislation as being unconstitutional. In 2017, the act was introduced by the Canadian Senate and it was passed overwhelmingly by Parliament, but the entire federal cabinet objected to it and voted against it. So they tried to then have it taken out as unconstitutional. The bill, quote, made it illegal to require anyone to undergo genetic testing or to be required to disclose the result if having the test and disclosing it is a condition for obtaining goods or services such as an insurance policy or to qualify for a job or other contract, end quote. That was from an article in iPolitics. That article was from about a year ago, but I linked to it in the show notes because it was a good description of it. it bars employers and insurance companies from requiring genetic data, but it does contain exceptions for medical, scientific, and pharmaceutical purposes. I don't quite know what the details are on that yet. But the whole story of this legislation is kind of a long and winding road, so I would encourage you to look through the CBC piece, the more recent one that just came out. Ex-ICANN CEO is now co-CEO of the VC that tried to buy .org. If you remember that, the Internet Society tried to sell the .org top-level domain off to a VC firm called Ethos Capital. Now, the ex-ICANN CEO, Fadi Chahadi, I don't know how you pronounce his name, I think that's in the ballpark, he has surfaced as the new co-CEO of Ethos Capital. So he was rumored to be mixed up in this transaction back when it was announced, and his name was found on a domain Whois record for a domain registered by Ethos Capital. Remember, Internet Society entered into an agreement to sell .org to Ethos for $1.135 billion, but the deal was scuttled when ICANN started looking into it, and they surmised that the whole thing didn't pass the smell test, and so the deal was canceled. This time, the latest chapter of this was uncovered by Andrew Olliman over at Domain Name Wire. So it looks like some inside baseball was being played there for sure. And finally, Axis of Easy Salon number 13, the phase shift everybody is bracing for, has already happened. So this week, Charles and Jesse and myself, we figured that the often posited societal restructuring or phase shift, characterized by a transition from the linear to the non-linear, is not something coming at us from an uncertain future. It's already occurred. It's a pretty interesting conversation, and you can link there from the show notes and check it out or watch the video. That is it for this week, so I hope everyone stays sane, stay healthy, stay cool in this heat wave, and we'll see you all next week. That's Bangladesh, rhymes with your friend.